At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
That's sort of the direction some of these next projects are taking, which is really helping children and families and schools grow things and just learn that relationship that we can have that transcends all the other things. It's just knowing that you can cut out so many other things when you just grow the snap pea and eat the snap pea. And These things feel so impossible until you just start doing them. It's really just a matter of just start doing them.
You're listening to the Good Dirt Podcast. This is a place where we dig into the nitty-gritty of sustainable living through food, fashion, and lifestyle.
And we're your hosts, Mary and Emma Kingsley, the mother and daughter founder team of Lady Farmer. We're sowing seeds of slow living through our community platform, events, and online marketplace.
We started this podcast as a means to share the wealth of information and quality conversations that we're having in our world as we dream up and deliver ways for each of us to live into the new paradigm, one that is regenerative, balanced, and whole.
We want to put the microphone in front of the voices that need to be heard the most right now. The farmers, the dreamers, the designers, and the doers.
So come cultivate a better world with us. We're so glad you're here. Now, let's dig in.
Good morning, Emma.
Hi.
So, Emma, this morning I thought it might be good for us to reflect back on the last week or two. Have we experienced slow living in the midst of so many things happening all around us? We've had a lot of events here in the last couple of weeks, and it's important and interesting to reflect back and see, how do we experience slow living even in the midst of all of it?
That's a great question. For me, I think through everything that I've learned in the past few years, especially doing this podcast and talking to all these amazing people, for me, it really comes down to being in the present moment. So as much as I can, if I'm starting to feel stressed or overwhelmed, especially by everything that's going on in the greater world, I come to the present moment and I try to find something outside to look at, or I try to get outside and breathe deeply. And just coming back to the present moment, it seems so trite and simple, but it really does make such a difference. And the more that you do that, the more little space that you create, then you let in room for like really grand, wonderful ideas, like the ones that we talk about every week here.
Yeah.
It just really means trying to turn off my monkey brain. It's like meditating.
So, you know, the past is past and we don't even have the future yet.
Right.
It's not even guaranteed. The wisdom is that the present is all we have. The way I try to seize the slow living moments, even in the midst of everything, is, you know, taking a walk, feeling the air. I was just out front and noticing the blue chicory flowers are still in bloom. They show up in the morning. I was so happy to walk out there and see them. They're so cheerful and just so, there's so many of them. They're all over our front paddock.
And so do you mean they show up in the morning and then they like go away every day? Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. So if you're not out there at the right time of day, you miss them. But I caught them today and it's really delightful.
That's sweet. So, and are the chicory flowers, is that the same chicory plant that's like in the coffee in New Orleans?
Yeah, I believe so.
That's fun.
I might be wrong about that, but I think it is the same plant.
Anyways, this is fun. We're here today. We're actually in the same room. Yeah. For those listening who might not know, we usually record separately. I'm at my house in D.C. usually, and my mom is here at the farm. But this morning, we're both here at the farm. And it's lovely to sit in the same room and chat. This is a special intro recording because this will be our last intro for a while. We're not going to be super specific about timing because we're not actually sure, but we are going to be specific that we know we're going to come back. It's going to be sometime in the new year, hopefully earlier than later, but we can't make any promises. But like the little chicory flower outside that blooms and then needs to go away, and like everything in nature needs to have a little break, we are going to take a sabbatical the rest of the year on the podcast, on publishing. We've taken little breaks in the past, and for longtime listeners, you might notice that we've kind of been slowing down in recent weeks and months by publishing new interviews every other week. But with just everything going on, we are going to do a grand experiment, really turn it down, and we just have some quiet. So there won't be anything published over the next few months. What this means for us is on our end, we're going to have a lot more time and bandwidth to really root down and dig deep and dream up all of the things that we want to be exploring here that we haven't had the mental capacity to look at. We're going to be reading and be inspired, and we still want to hear from you guys.
We've been doing the podcast since January 2020, and that first year, we had an episode every other week, and then the next year, 2021, we started a weekly episode published on Fridays. And for a long stretch, those were all new interviews.
For years, probably.
For years. You know, when the baby was born last year, we started utilizing some of the past episodes, which has really been, I've really enjoyed that, going back and revisiting our past guests and reaching back out to them and seeing where they are. You know, there's over 200 episodes, so that's a lot of great stuff in there. So I've really enjoyed mining that. But now it's becoming more and more apparent to both of us that as all things evolve, we really want the podcast to evolve. We have new ideas. We have exciting things we want to explore. But you really need to step back and let that stuff
percolate.
Germinate, incubate.
Oh, germinate, incubate is better because the.
But I was thinking, you know, about lady coffee. Farmer. Like, these things need space, just like the seeds in the ground and
The bears in the caves, the hibernating animals.
Yeah, I mean, these things need time and space and pause. We talk about that all the time. We talk about observing how you feel, and we feel like we want
more time.
We want more time. And we want to explore other aspects of
the good dirt.
Of the good dirt.
Just to reiterate, we're not going anywhere.
We are not.
Just taking a pause. I've been calling it a sabbatical. That sounds right to me.
Yeah. Time to step away and see what emerges.
So yeah, I'm so excited. There's lots of things that I want to dig into in our time away and come back refreshed and full. And it might look structurally different. We might be doing shorter seasons of releases. We might be doing different formats of episodes besides just interviews. All of these things that we've thought about a lot, and we're just so excited to piece it all together.
I just became a grandmother for the second time.
I just became an aunt for the first time.
Yes, this happened earlier this week, and just more than ever, it gives us a chance to recognize what needs to be happening now, what needs to be paused for now, and how we want to proceed. You know, we're at the height of summer right now. The flowers are at their height. The plants, the foliage, everything is just bursting with life. You just go out there and it's just a surge of a life force. And it's so exciting. But at the same time, there's that little bit in the air that lets you know that things have shifted. There's that little tinge of autumn in the atmosphere. And it tells us that the season is changing. Things are going to be winding down, slowing down, moving into the dormancy of winter. And so we're taking a cue from that. With this episode, we're winding down, slowing down, and we're going to be taking a pause on the Good Dirt podcast after just about 6 years here.
We admit we didn't actually plan this out too much, but it turns out to be a great episode to pause on because for this reason, our dear friend Jana, who is a longtime listener of The Good Dirt, has become a dear friend since being a listener, reached out to us and said, "Hey, I love your podcast. It inspired me to start this early childhood education program." We had her on a little while ago to tell us about her program, Earth Friends, and we have just recently had a conversation with her again as a follow-up to see where that has developed and where that has gone. And this conversation really became a wonderful sort of reminder for us about just what it means to go out and do it and be it and live the good dirt. And so it feels very apropos that we would be pausing on this episode, leaving you all with these words. So for those unfamiliar with Jana or need a refresher, Mom, you want to introduce her?
Yes. So Jana is founder of We Are Earth Friends, which is an environmental education program designed for children ages 3 to 8. And yes, we first spoke to Jana about a year and a half ago, which was an earlier phase of the Earth Friends project. But it's really great to circle back and to see how that has evolved. And also to hear about the progress of the food forest that she and her husband have been working on at their suburban home in New Jersey. It's just so exciting to hear her talk about that. And we didn't really realize it at the time, as Emma said, but in listening back, it's apparent how this conversation really sets the perfect tone for this pause as we prepare for the next phase of the Good Dirt. Because, like so many of our listeners, Jana really lives out her passion for the earth in everything she does, from her work in environmental education to her home and her table, and actually the very rhythm of her family life. Our mission at Lady Farmer has always been, since the very beginning, to encourage everyone that there's a better way for us to live on the planet. And we have so many choices that can impact our own existence now and the future for every child coming along to take us forward on this human journey we're all on. So we hope you'll listen in to this lively discussion about all the Lady Farmer things and all the ways and reasons for us to care about the good dirt. And we're so grateful, again, for all of your interest and support. And please be assured there will be more. In the meantime, you can subscribe to The Almanac, our online community and Substack. You can get our newsletter there. You can get articles, updates, and announcements to see what we're up to. And again, please continue to write in at our email, thegooddirtpodcast@gmail.com, or call us and leave a voicemail at 443-459-1950. Love all your thoughts and suggestions and ideas. And tell us what you'd like to hear more of on this platform. But for now, here's our wonderful conversation with Jana Hockenjoss, founder of We Are Earth Friends.
Thank you, everyone.
We'll be back.
Hi, I am Jana Hockenjoss, and I'm really glad to be here today with both of you, Mary and Emma. And I'm coming in from the Jersey Shore, so specifically South Jersey, a little town called Pine Beach, and it's about a block from a river and 20 minutes from the ocean, which is why I love it.
Wow.
But also what's really exciting about where we live in New Jersey is it's right next to the Pine Barrens. So I don't know if anyone's familiar with the Pine Barrens ecosystem, but it's one of the largest forests on the eastern seaboard, and it's extremely biodiverse. And I feel like it's a little bit understated because the first time I learned about the Pine Barrens, I was a New Yorker. I'd been living in New York City for a while, and Jersey was like, wah, wah, bridge and tunnel. Here I am. I live here. And I love it. But all I knew about the Pine Barrens is there was a Jersey devil and that it was haunted and full of like backwards people. And it's so the opposite. It's just this beautiful ecosystem of trees and people and just generations of people here in South Jersey that really truly know and care about this land. And I think that's like a lot we can learn from when we look at some of where we have the oldest forests or the lakes or their whatever, who are the people who have been living around them? Yes, indigenous cultures, absolutely. But just all the people who've been, I would say, like stewarding and tending to this land. And sometimes, honestly, it's like a lot of hunters and fishermen that care a lot.
Yeah. How long have you lived in this area?
I've lived here since March of 21, technically January of 2020, just not in this house. So my husband is from Central Jersey, East Brunswick, but I'm from Western PA. So I'm from like the countryside.
Yeah, yeah.
Country back in
so
the day.
So this, getting to know this land and this place is a relatively recent thing for you.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. We've gone on just some short hikes because I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. So those only extend so long. So then you throw a golden retriever puppy into the mix, which we have now, and still gets more chaotic. But just discovering just the land, there's all kinds of, it's a wetland environment. There's cranberry bogs that go back for centuries. There's just all kinds of history with the land and the people here. That's pretty cool. And so many bird species and so many plant species, and the soil is specifically acidic, which is why blueberry bushes grow so well in New Jersey, because they have so many pine needles that drop in the ground. But then if you're going to have a food forest like we do in the backyard, you have to figure out how to build soil. So even though I'm here to talk about Earth Friends today, I'll talk about building soil any day too. But Earth Friends, right?
Yes. Yeah. So tell us about Earth Friends.
That's my organization, which is a nonprofit that brings environmental education, or let's say the umbrella of that, which would be climate change education, sustainability, earth education. But the most important thing is whatever that education is to our youngest generation. So our 3-year-olds to about 6 to 8-year-olds, I would say. Definitely, though, a focus on those youngest learners in preschool and in kindergarten classrooms and even first grade, who in my research and then now also experience are left out of those conversations about learning about our planet, which is as simple as learning about where we live, learning about how we live, so our human impact, and of course, learning about who we live with, which is each other, species, plants, animals, clouds, crystals, everything. And so it's such, I guess I would say, an organization of love and curiosity and discovery, where the adults get to be co-learners with the children. And I think that's really important for everyone, because I think as a society or civilization of humans, we've made things very complex, and we have created many systems, and we can go into all of the chaos that is today. But with Earth Friends, because we're working with really young children, it's about getting back to basics. So the basics of loving and understanding what's around you. Of once you have an understanding and a love for something, it becomes a lot more natural and inherent to want to take care of it, steward it, just the concepts of just sharing this home that we have. And so that's Earth Friends. And since we've last chatted here, it's taken a winding path, but one I could still look back and I can see where it came from. So it's not like super winding. It's still a program that is very specifically designed for this young age of 3 to 8, which is specifically early childhood. So that would be preschool to third grade. It's still about getting nature into classrooms, but also bringing children out into nature. And that's such an important thing for early education, because nature in and of itself has the sensory experiences, play, you learn resilience, you learn about something other than yourself. So nature, as we know, is such a great teacher. But what's evolved in Earth Friends, other than just get the kids outside, get them to care, get them dirty, get them in the soil, we're not making them do anything, but have them stand in the rain, whatever it is. I guess what I would say is what differentiates Earth Friends from the very few programs for children this age that teach us about, we'll say, environmental literacy, is that there's also a focus on our built environment or our human-built environment. And that is to say, we give as much attention to, or I should say in the context of the program, which is, it's a 5-module program. There's different, well, I'll go through them really quickly. I think that by sharing what the modules are, there's a better understanding of what kind of information Earth Friends imparts, which would be any adult can teach it, right? You can be a parent, you can be a teacher, but we'll just say you're a teacher in a classroom. So the first module is We Love Our Planet. So that's all about planetary systems and climate zones and land, water, and air. Like, that simple. We're learning about land, water, and air, and really why, out of all the planets, ours is so special. We can live on it. We can't live on the others. They're awesome and they have their attributes, but we love Earth. And then from We Love Our Planet, we move to We Love Our Neighbors, all about biodiversity, different habitats all over the world, but also the understanding that all life, whether it's a panda or an oak tree or you and me, that we need safe shelter, we need clean water, we need some solid land, and we need breathable air. We need all of those things. And so that comes into this, the bigger learning of equity, but equity that goes beyond the human race. So that when you're really young, children are talking about everyone being safe and everyone having a home, that really does translate out into the world of how they see it. And We Love Our Neighbors, we move to We Love Our Food, which is all about growing our own food, learning about where our food comes from, soil, getting to meet all our soil friends and our pollinators, and just having this opportunity for children to really see how plants are life and the soil is life and how that life then in a sense begets life, right? The plants feed the animals, we eat the animals, we eat the plants, but also just the magic of when a four-year-old grows asparagus, they'll likely eat the asparagus. When a four-year-old gets asparagus from the grocery store or grandma's kitchen, that's a lesser likelihood that they eat it, because there's just something about getting to grow your own food. Or just a basil leaf, they'll be like, oh my gosh, oh, this is yummy. And you're like, you're eating like just a straight up basil leaf. I don't even do that. But there's just, it's such a nourishing experience. And to have young children have that nourishing experience in their formative years, whether it's a pot in a classroom or a garden outside a home or at a school, it's still that nourishing experience. And then from We Love Our Food, we go to We Love Our Energy, which is learning about where we get energy and what we do with energy. Well, we turn it into power and electricity. And our energy can come from the sun, and it can come from the heat underground, geothermal. It can come from fossil fuels. It's all there and it's all equal. It's just an understanding of it. And that understanding, part of it is that some of our energy we can use again and again, like the sun. Some of our energy we can't use once we've used it, like fossil fuels. And it's helping children see, why do we use energy? How much energy do we need? How can we use less energy and why that's important? So that sort of moves us from this natural environment, right, of planet and other species and food, we start to move towards our human-built environment of energy consumption, because we are really the only species that consumes energy in this way. But it shows little kids, like, this is what humans do. So how do we do it well? How do we do it kind? How do we do it with respect for our land, our water, our air, everyone having safe shelter, enough food, etc.? And then from energy, we move into We Love Our Things, which is talking about all the things that humans make and build and create and do. And this tends to be one of the most surprising modules. Like, why do you have We Love Our Things? And are they really going to care? Let me tell you how excited I just taught this, the first lesson of this module, I think, well, yesterday. And it's a box of materials. So it's just like samples of nondescript. So they don't look like an object. So a square of wood, ceramic, glass, rubber, plastic that's hard, plastic that's malleable, whatever, 10 materials in a box. They get so excited to learn what those materials build and where they came from in nature. But that, in the formative years, helps children understand that things don't just appear. Right? Mm-hmm. The tree gave us that. The sand gave us that. The sheep gave us that. And then they understand that when I'm taking materials from nature and building with it, that they have value, that I want to take care of this thing because I don't want to keep doing it over and over again. And I could go on and on about all these like modules and lessons. But what we've realized when I say we, there's a board of us at Earth Friends. There's teachers that teach it. My family who has to live and breathe it. But it's that we're helping young children and whomever else is in their lives learn the interconnectedness of life on this planet. And when we start to explore that interconnectedness, a lot more things have value than perhaps they would when we think of this sort of solo human experience, or the human experience of I'm here and I'm doing this, but I go on a hike and I care about nature, or I give to the manatees and I care about manatees. But this, we are all in this web of life and we all play really important roles and we all affect one another.
So I'm curious, we have two young children who are really immersed in it, and you're immersed in it. So maybe you don't have much of a sense of this yet, but do you see this sinking into your kids that you think might be giving them a new perspective than other modes of education, more conventional modes of education that don't include this content?
Yes. I feel a little bit like answering that is a projection into a future that I want to see.
Sure.
But I'll take it as far as the 3-ish years we've been doing Earth Friends. Mm-hmm. Awareness is shifting for children, which in early childhood education, and I have a lot of, I'll say, really great mentors. So the woman who owns and she's the director of the preschool where this program was piloted, she's been very instrumental in helping me understand what early education is and what needs to be in this program and what doesn't belong, along with a wonderful professor at TCMJ, which is the College of New Jersey, their education department. So I've had a lot of people keeping my big ideas in check because I don't come from the world of education. I'm learning and I'm going to conferences and I'm taking trainings and I'm doing everything I can to soak it in so that I'm doing this truly developmentally appropriately for these children. All that to say that in the beginning, I was like, let's show these kids that there's this whole big world and they should care about this whole big world and how cool and exciting it is. And everyone's like, nope, not in early education. In early childhood, we talk about the context of the world we can see, right? We don't go beyond that because developmentally, that's a big jump. That's abstract. That doesn't really work with your 4- and 5-year-olds. And that was the place that I pushed back with, but what if they could make those connections? What could that be like? And so that was so much of my challenge of, do I do this traditional way, in which you can't really talk about there's no planet B, and you can't talk about where oil comes from, and you can't talk about manufacturing in a sense, because those are all just going to go right over a child's head. But Earth Friends has evolved into something that's about, which is why I think it's so great for adults too, making the connections of a daily life to a life beyond what you can see. And what I've seen is that's what children who have experienced Earth Friends are starting to do. And an example of this is there was a child who was just at a music festival. And it was a festival, right? Lots of stuff, lots of food trucks, whatever, with his family. And someone just took his lunch garbage or whatever. I was just going to toss it for him. And he was saying, no, I'm throwing that away. I was like, no, it's fine. I'll throw it away. It doesn't matter. So no, I want to throw it away because I want to know I put it into the landfill and I put this in the recycling. And so it's such a silly thing, but this was a 4-year-old that was like, I want to be responsible for my garbage.
That is amazing.
Wow.
And so,
yeah.
An ownership.
Exactly. But wow. Does that really affect the whole? No, probably not that action. But we're not necessarily looking for actions at this age. We're looking for behaviors.
Yes.
And we're looking for actually allowing children to instill values within themselves. So when I heard that story, I was like, oh my God.
Yes.
Quinn just wanted to throw away his own trash with his hands and make sure it got to where it needed to go. Such a small step, but really felt big because how many adults just are like, whatever, it's gone.
Oh, I don't have to care about it. The whole world.
You take my trash. It's almost like you feel better when someone takes your trash because you don't have to actually be like, oh, you got to sort that and see if that goes somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's just little things like that. Or I had a child the other day who was talking about he'd always wanted to be an engineer. You can tell he's just telling me, well, I'm going to be an engineer that builds these homes so that the bees can come and they have a place to live. And it was complete like, what? No, that makes no sense. But the want to, in a way, be like, oh, you want to play with some biolific design. And I haven't even used that word, but wanting to be an engineer that was not engineering nature, but inviting nature into whatever building it was they were building. So this was like I honestly think it was like a car manufacturing plant that was helpful for bees. But
that also suggests the type of thinking that of cohabitation with creatures, with nature.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's in our sensibilities much
right
currently in the larger culture. In fact, it's something that I think traditionally has been discouraged. You seal your houses up so the insects won't get in. Yeah. Of course, there's reasons for that. But it cultivates a mindset that we are separate and we need to stay separate and there is no commingling of these lives. But I love that sensibility that maybe there is a way to share space. Yeah.
And I think what I've seen is that children are excited at this age to learn that there's more to the world.
Yeah.
And that they have a say in it. And that say can just be excited about what plants they get to grow, or they come in and they're excited that their shirt has Mother Earth on it. And again, these are such small things, but when we think about other formative educational experiences, nobody's learning how to spell yet. Nobody's learning how to do algebra yet. Nobody's Van Gogh yet, right? But you have these, like, I want to say teeny tiny moments of the building blocks of inspiration for that child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this has just been some missing building blocks. So we don't really know what it's going to look like yet.
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't look like anything.
No, I think it's profound, really. And I'm speaking about the opportunity to build in this stage of life. And I'm not an early childhood educator. I can't claim to have any real knowledge of that beyond raising my own kids. But it seems like this age group is a fantastic opportunity to build some emotional connection around it.
Has a Earth Friends, has a lot of social emotional learning embedded within the lessons and programs. And that is important in early childhood, as is universal design learning. So learning for all types of, we'll say, brains and bodies, right? Not everybody's going to learn in the same way. So all of that is very woven throughout. So it's not just content, information, it's an educational experience around what gives us life.
I have some questions around the form exactly it is in currently. So I believe when we last spoke, you were either still creating or finishing the curriculum and teaching about it. And I believe, is it now, like, for folks listening, is it available to literally purchase if they want to bring it into their school? Do they need to be trained in it? What does that look like if I'm interested in this program and bringing it to either my school, or maybe I'm a homeschool mom, or maybe I do something in between?
The most excited way I can answer that is it looks easy these days. It didn't used to be easy. Now anyone can purchase the program and they can choose to do it with the digital content only, because maybe they feel they don't need storybooks and photo books, and that's totally fine. Or you can purchase it with the photo books and the storybooks. But the great thing is that there's 5 hours of asynchronous professional development. So if you're a teacher and you want to get 5 hours of PD in for environmental education or climate change, whatever it is, it's already in there. It's baked in. You would get if you complete it, you get a certificate for it that we'll send you. So that's like the teacher part, meaning that rather than signing up and waiting and getting groups together, which it was before, it's if you look at it and you're like, yep, I want to add this to my classroom, or I want to add this to my summer camp, whatever, you just purchase the program, either digital purchase or digital plus books, right? So that's one thing for teachers. But as we continued getting to know people, we're like, parents, homeschool, anybody can buy it now. So the place that you can start out, if you're like, I just want to like dabble in this and see what this is about, it's $150. You purchase the digital program, which brings you into the educator portal, which is where all our content is, where it will always be. It's lifetime access, one time. It has the whole entire program and the modules. And then as we continue to build and learn about different organizations and resources, we'll continue to add them there. And that means that the five modules, you can teach them with the framework that it was originally introduced with, which is from We Love Our Planet to We Love Our Things. And that goes from September to May. Or you can just pick and choose and say, this is a really awesome lesson, or we're really focused on our garden, or I would love to teach children more about weather and climate, or let's get into our materials and natural resources. Because that's what, gosh, having been at speaking at and presenting, but also just attending many different conferences across the country and everywhere, we're not all doing this the same way. Just like mm-hmm. we're not all gardening in the same way. Mm-hmm. We might have a very similar outcome or goal, but getting there is a lot of moving pieces. So with Earth Friends, we wanted to say, okay, what's the easiest way that someone can access this? And once they access it, what's the easiest way that they can always have what we're doing forever, right? Because sometimes when teachers enroll in something or to get a curriculum, you get the updates, or you pay again in 2 years or whatever. So we're just trying to keep Earth Friends pretty simple, stupid.
That's awesome. Do you still do trainings for people?
Yes. And I will still absolutely. Yeah. So if you go into like our store, you'll be able to see, this is how I can just get the program for me and start with my two kids on Saturday. That's an option. Or you can go, okay, I'm a school. I want to get 8 teachers involved. I need a little bit more than this. I want to do this professional development, which is then we can do a live training, you know, where you work with me and we just go through what the framework is for Earth Friends, how to teach environmental education at this age and do it in a way that is manageable and sustainable and consistent for the teacher, but developmentally appropriate for the children, meaning how to incorporate play and hands-on activities and everything like that.
I'm curious how it's going, getting it into other schools. Is that happening? Are you seeing that happen?
It's slow. Like the interest really gets there. And that's one of the ways that we shifted, is there's a lot of interest, but schools are in a tough place right now.
Yeah.
So I'm playing the game of, you know what? I know there's so many things that, even though I feel this is such a priority and a lot of parents might, it doesn't mean it can come to the top of the list when there's funding and there's cuts and there's so many things happening. That's one of the reasons we're like, you know what? Let's make this affordable for parents. Let's make this if you want to teach it at camp. Because at the end of the day, my biggest goal for Earth Friends, and it's always been this, and it sometimes I just don't know quite what it looks like, and it's the goal of our board and everyone involved, is how do we get this to as many young children as possible? What does that look like? And of course, we're an organization. So unless somebody wants to dump a pile of money in our lap, which I hear is not happening these days, we can't just hand it out for free. Maybe someday. So that's why we're really opening up the portal to all adults that interact with young children. If you want something different, and there's a lot of activities that are there's really no financial cost to many of the activities. It's definitely a program that doesn't require a lot of materials because we don't want to create materials. So there can be a lot of programs that come with kits and boxes and all of that. And we tried to strip all that away and just say, let's learn truly with the world around us, right? Using what we already have in our homes, using what we already have in our schools, using improvising, learning what that even means. Also, that way in and of itself helps children learn with the world around them, right? It's one thing to figure out what in your classroom can help teach the lesson. That's a very tangible, tactile way to for children to see, oh, in the context of things I already know, now I'm learning a new thing. So it's like a new layer, versus when you have a makerspace kit that comes in and it's this thing that came in from outside and then we learn about it, but then it like goes back on a shelf or something. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that whatsoever. Those things are great. I think it's great to have both.
Yeah. Do you have a lot of interest in homeschool groups? Have you noticed?
I just don't have a lot of connections with homeschool groups. Mm-hmm. And I, to be really honest, this is a shift we've made at the beginning of this year, because I realized a lot of the first couple of years was content creation and mm-hmm. getting to know what was going on.
Sure, yeah.
And really refining what the program is. But now anybody that has it, or people that, you know, are starting to work with it, like we feel really good about it. So this has been a first year of, okay, let's like really get this out there. Let's do some guerrilla marketing. Let's get as many like these silly shirts. Let's just get people to know what Earth Friends even is and how it is a little bit different from a lot of climate change education resources, which might not be as developmentally appropriate from a young age, or they might have, unfortunately, a political flavor to them that isn't really, that people don't always love. So now it'll be an interesting year, because this is the year where I'm like, this has been created. It is out there. Mm-hmm. Children who love it. So it's almost like planting seeds and being like, they'll grow. Maybe not on your time and maybe not the way you want them to. But I'm also, and I have a lot of other friends that are in these, not this business of early education and environmental education, but just in the land of the things I would say the three of us care about, things are a little slow right now.
Yeah.
People are a little trepidatious right now. So I'm not going to have Earth Friends be the thing that's pushed in everybody's face right now. So opportunities to talk about it, awesome. And that's what I have found too. The more in-person conversations, the more like actual one-on-one versus posting about this or doing whatever, but it's the connections that I've made at conferences and fairs and having conversations with people that they're like, oh, whoa, this is really awesome. And those are the places where I see it grow. But for a while, I think I was stuck in this loop of building something viral and realizing after about 2 years, like, this is a lot of work and I'm tired and I don't even want my kids on the internet that much. So what does this really look like? And so a little bit of a gear shift there, I think, downshifting.
I think that's really wise. And what I was thinking when you were saying that and you brought up the metaphor of the seed, you don't know when this might be really applicable. It's like waiting for the soil temperature to be right for the thing to germinate.
Yes.
So I hope you can feel accomplished and satisfied in the creating of it. Not that it won't go anywhere. You know, you have done that piece. And of course, it's still evolving. But again, just try not to get really impatient with
and its that's my
trajectory. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is always my life lesson, is patience. And this might sound like a little woo or spiritual, but one day I took a yoga class and like in my bedroom, right? Like yeah. I didn't go anywhere. But, and I was like thinking and thinking about Earth Friends. I'm putting so much effort into like, where can I go and who's going to die and what can I do next and what can I do and what can I create? Because I am in a lot of right now with a couple different organizations in the process of creating and collaborating, co-branding materials, right? So that we'll have a bigger free resources section with other education brands, other environmental that just are Earth Friends, and we're teaching maybe something more specific. We love our soil, for example, or we love whatever. So there are things still happening behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But I got up from my yoga mat and it was just like I had this voice or thought or something that was like, you've created it. Calm down, mm-hmm. Let it do its thing. Stop touching it. Stop fussing with it. Stop worrying about it. Like it's here, it's there, and its time will come. Like just go live your life, go be a mom, keep doing the things you're doing, but quit creating new things as if the next thing is going to be like the, whoa, my God, it's there. And I really had to sit with that because it felt like someone like tied my hands and I was like, oh my God, I can't do it. What? This is crazy. I have to keep it going. I have to keep it going. But again, gardening metaphor, but it's like you start a garden and you plant the things and you find what plants you're going to start with and you cultivate your space and you earthscape and you plan out guilt. You do all these different things and you're always doing. And then one day the garden's, oh, I've got it. I've got it. I'm going to actually give you this volunteer strawberry here. And you're just like, oh, okay, I don't have to do anything in this moment. And for me and my personality in my life, that feels really weird, but it also feels like my own sort of personal evolution. And I think we have to have faith in what we create. And even as adults, quit falling into the instant gratification category because,
oh yeah,
it's tough. Everything is supposed to, the second you want it, it's supposed to be here right now.
You work with writers. You are a book editor. Yes.
Yes.
And you know, this phenomenon, people work on their books and they work and work and finalize them and then they get them out there. And then there's a real period where it's, you have to really let it go and you don't know what's going to happen out there. But for me personally, my experience of that has been telling myself and reassuring myself that I did the job. I did the thing that I set out to do. The rest of it, what happens to it or who gets it or whatever, that's really not, that's out of my control. And it's really kind of out of my realm of concern.
The thing that drives me to be like, ah, I want this out there in all the places is that I will meet people who will say, oh my gosh, there's nothing like this. Oh my gosh, I never thought of it this way. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, this is brilliant. Oh my gosh, kids need this. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden that's refueled in me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how do we get it to all the kids? What can we do? But school administration officials are tough and they've got a lot going on. And parents are bombarded by this program, that program, this parenting technique, this product, this whatever. And so being very aware that, you know, this is the world. Like I try to think of like how it would be if I was a parent, what would I be interested in for my kids? But definitely I can say I really would like this to be much more in schools because I do know that the education that my children will be getting and it doesn't include very much of learning about this.
Will they be going to a public school? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So back in the 90s, when there were beginning to be the environmental education programs, it was called Green School in our little school. And it was seen very much as an add-on.
Yes.
And I volunteered in that program a lot because it's something that spoke to me very much. And I was even head of it for a couple years in the school. And we were constantly hearing the same thing you were just saying. The teachers are bombarded. They have so much content to cover and everything. So I'm worried that not much has changed in 30 years in terms of that kind of attitude about integrating this. But I will say this on a more positive note, as we've discovered in Lady Farmer, doing Lady Farmer and creating a community and speaking to people, it's not a giant audience at all, but it's an audience that responds to this and wants it and is very passionate about this subject area and they seek it out. And you have the same. You have the same audience for this. I know that as a new grandmother, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to dive into this very program. I guess I have to wait till he's 3.
Oh, you really don't.
Even as it is, I put him out in the grass every time.
But I was going to say, I'm sure you're already doing all these things. And yeah, some of it, my impatience is just as a parent.
Sure.
With children in this world. And I suppose my fervor for Earth Friends sometimes is the antidote to my heartbreak.
Yeah, grief.
But like we were talking a little bit earlier, we're in a time of so much opportunity.
Yes.
We're in a time, like when anybody is talking to me about when to make these sustainable changes in their home, right? Whether it's chemical-free bed sheets to starting a garden to replacing their laundry detergent, right? I think that the best time to make those kind of changes is when something is already changing, right? You wore out the bed sheets, right? You have to get new ones. That's the opportunity to say, okay, if I have to get new bed sheets, then I'm going to get these kind. or you move into a new home and you have this yard to work with, that's a great time to say, okay, what relationship do I want to have with this land? You have new children in your lives. That's all also so many changes, so many routine changes and eating changes and this. And so I think in times of change, that is when you can actually make change. That feels very redundant to say, but that's when I've had the most success. Okay, I have to put diapers on my kid anyway, cloth diaper. Okay, I have to, I don't know, replace this, our HVAC system, right? I have to do it anyway. Let's look into what it looks like to have a heat pump. So that right now, I think the world is full of the necessity for change. And what we can empower ourselves with is we can choose the change. And that does mean a lot of times working outside of these systems that I think a lot of us feel are broken or corrupt or failing, whatever you want to call it. But outside of that, with what we buy and what we teach and what we share and what we do, that's the places that we can have the most effect. But I think we're told a different story. For sure. And that's when it can be frustrating, right? Like, or as a parent, the only education your kids, like, they go to school, that's their education. No, they get educated in so many different ways. So many different ways. Mm-hmm. I've learned so many things outside of the things I've learned in school. And so when we can remember that, I think that's also like the antidote to the frustrations that are felt right now about the direction things might be going.
I also want to say that back to what we were talking about, the frustration around getting it out there and having people know that it even exists and making it available to everyone possible. And related to what you were just saying, which is where when it comes down to it, all we can really do is start with like where we are and our own 2 feet and like the ground that we're standing on. And the idea of infiltrating the education system and like getting into schools is like, that is just such a, like, yeah, a gargantuan. How do you even start to do that? But you can do it, first of all, even before your own school, you can do it in your house with your kids, and then you can do it at your kids' school, of course. And I think it's just, we can't underestimate like the ripple effects of just like, doing it where you are with what you have in the moment.
It's kind of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just starting where you are when you're in backyard. And as we said, everybody has their own opportunity to make good dirt, whatever that means to people. And this is one of the ways. And speaking of starting in your own home, I want to hear about what you're doing there with your suburban food forest.
Sure.
You live in the suburbs. And you, I know you and your husband have taken on this project at the same time as you're cultivating the Earth Friends curriculum. So talk about that. That sounds exciting to me.
I feel like you need to talk to my husband on here, because what I've realized in our years at this home together with this food forest, like, he's really just a genius out there with the land. And it started as a process or a pathway of healing for him. To go be out in the garden in his bare feet, getting frustrated, getting fascinated, learning what our soil was and wasn't, and doing some things like one day, oh, hey, I ordered 30 fruit trees. I'm like, okay, let's do it. And in my mind, I'm like, where are these fruit trees going to go in this little plot of land? But now we're about 4 years in and it's like, an oasis, a forest back there, and it feels so good and it feels so possible. But now it's just this place that's teeming with life, and it's an opportunity, we hope, for our children to see what this could be like, because I think it's just as important to have this type of connection with nature as it is to go hike Bryce Canyon or something like that. What does it look like when we live with nature, inseparable from nature? And that's what this is for us. And each year has been a new layer, right? So just like this food forest all the things that he wanted or that we envisioned absolutely did not happen right away. And then when they did unfold, it wasn't even the way they thought that they would for the most part. But now I'd say we'd have over 2 dozen fruit trees. And this is the year that we really hope that they will have fruit for us. Last year, they had a lot of fruit for squirrels. And so yeah, we have to learn about how to share, or the squirrels do. But we ate our one fruit that we were able to harvest last year, and it was the persimmon. And it was like, I don't even know how to describe it. The most amazing experience eating this persimmon that we grew that tasted fantastic. And it kind of is always like having those moments, and we've had them again and again and again, with just growing our own food has been one of the most healing things. And with growing our own food, it's also been watching our soil change. Like it was sandy, sad suburban soil when we started, and now it's just like you can dig your hand in and just like chocolate cake. Like it's just anywhere. And there's all these pathways that wind around all these different guilds of fruit trees and annual vegetable beds. And it's just like a little mini adventure back there. And sometimes like when we water the garden, because we've had some really dry days here in New Jersey, we also just shower the kids and they just run around back there and run through the water. And it just feels like this experience. It's so hard to describe the sort of magic of it, because it feels like, oh, how could anybody just have this? You can. Mm-hmm. That's what we wish other people could know. You can. You might not watch as much Netflix as night, and you might be actual physical tired when you go to bed, but it's such a fulfilling thing. It's such a fulfilling way to exert effort in life. But also just, are we always doing something that invites life?
Yeah.
And that's been such a really awesome experience, because it's like getting to know all these new earth friends. Like I'm like really into stinging nettles and all the things you can do with them, and like the teas you can make. And let me tell you, I am not a tea person. I pretty much make fun of tea in favor of coffee. But tea from my backyard wins over any coffee any day. It's wild.
It's so true, especially in the summer when you can do like iced tea.
Oh, now I'm just like, oh, this whole new world opened up. We're just making these little evening teas after our kids go to bed. And we're like, this is so great. And it's so simple. And we just want so many more people to experience it. Not because it's do what we do, but it's like, we found something that feels good. And I think we all just want something that feels good. And being a couple years in, yeah, there was some work. There was some structural work. There was some earthscaping. There was some, okay, this worked, this didn't. This died, this lived. This isn't. Yes, there is that. But now that we're with it and we can walk around it and we can eat from it and we can enjoy it and the birds come and the creatures come, it's just like anybody could have this. It's really true. And that's what we kind of wish, is just like, how can we show people that any regular working family in suburban wherever with a plot of land can start to get to know that land and plant some trees and plant some perennials and salvage some materials and make some vegetable beds and heal the soil, which also means way less garbage in the house because you're composting. And yeah, these things, they feel so impossible until you just start doing them. It's really just a matter of just start doing them. And I think the challenge is that when you look around, not a lot of people probably in a vicinity like this are doing them. So there was some interesting moments in the beginning where our neighbors were like, what are they doing? What's happening? What's going on? But now we're the house that people walk down the street and they're like, oh, we always look at your house and we always wonder, and what's back there? So it's been this cool shift. But the truth is, yeah, we don't watch as much TV and we go to bed earlier because we're tired, but it's just so fulfilling and it's just so worth it. And one of the coolest things that takes its time, but then when it fruits, it's wild, is my husband just started growing mushrooms on logs.
Oh.
And wow, we have shiitakes, we have oyster mushrooms, like we've had pounds and pounds of them, and they're just growing from this mushroom garden. And it's, once they get going, it's so easy. So he's now incorporated these logs into the actual garden. So they're part of the guild. So all the guilds, you'll see these like little logs, and that's where the mushrooms start to grow. So it's just this amazing place that has fruit and vegetables and mushrooms.
Amazing. Do you have to grow them in shade, don't you?
Yeah, they like to be in shade and moist and wet. So the garden is under these two big pines that have always been in our yard. And it's this little like grotto of logs from our fallen oak tree that have turned into the mushroom garden, and he inoculated them all. Mm-hmm. But then what you do is, as long as they're in some sort of shade, so they can even be in your house or basement or wherever, as long as you keep them moist and wet, so you just water the mushroom logs. So that's been really cool, because we'll just come in and he's here, look at this oyster mushroom that's like this, like bigger than my head. What do we do for dinner?
And wow,
it's just such a cool thing to have as a family. There's really so much healing, I think, that we are missing that comes from a relationship with the land.
Yes.
And with Earth Friends, that's sort of the direction some of these next projects are taking, which is really helping children and families and schools garden and grow things and just learn that relationship that we can have that transcends all the other things. It's just knowing that you can cut out so many other things when you just grow the snap pea and eat the snap pea.
It almost seems too simple to be really true.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, growing things. How can that address so many of our issues? But when you sit down and you think about it and you're with the idea and you actually are doing it or are experimenting with it, exploring, growing things in whatever capacity you are, whatever scale, then it's a real unfolding. You start to discover all the ways that it is healing and it addresses things in our lives that feel out of balance and not so great.
It makes me think of trying to explain, for example, what it's like to grow your own food, trying to explain the interconnectedness that Earth Friends introduces to children. For someone who is a writer, myself, and an editor, it still gets so lost in words, because I feel like we've come from these very mechanical, in a sense, explanation of how we live life. There's process and there's product and there's production and there's yield and there's all of these things that look so good on paper and they look so good in Excel sheets and whatnot. And these are just not the things that belong there. So it's just like, to have people experience it, it's just do the program, grow the food, because it's so hard to figure out how to tabulate it. And then when you start to do that, it weirdly loses what it is. And that's also interesting for me too, because I think just as a family and as a person and the people I interact with, shifting away from that hyper-productive, digitized, monetized world to be like, how do we just get back to connecting with each other? How do we get back to healing together and living together and loving together and being in community? And it's really hard to explain that on paper.
We were just going to ask you, what can you say about slow living now that you are a few years into this project and the project in your home and with Earth Friends? And I think you just said it beautifully. What else would you add to that?
Whew, slow living.
Yeah.
I think for me right now, slow living is allowing ourselves to be in the experience without constantly trying to change the experience. And sometimes that's just exactly what you want it to be, and it's right on pace and it's wonderful and it's flowing and it feels great and you're aligned with everything around you. But other times you have to sit with yourself. Like you just have to be just you. And that's what I've realized from taking a lot of the mobile computer apps off my phone recently, which is a headache, depending if you care, if you can post right away from your phone or you can do this, that, and the other thing. But the most interesting thing that I learned from not having a mobile computer, so to speak, was that I had to spend so much more time with myself and how uncomfortable that is for so many people today, not because of the people that they are, but because of everything that our life includes. Every way we're hyper connected to this app and what's going on and getting pinged for this. And that I find is slow living, is just being with yourself. And it, again, it, like you were saying before, it sounds so like too simple. Mm-hmm. But I think too simple is maybe the direction we could start to go.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Because then we start to trust ourselves again. Then we start to enjoy ourselves again. Then we can actually parse out what you actually might want to change about your own life versus what you think you should because of the way someone else you're watching is living. I think that's really important too. Yeah, I feel like this is one of these conversations that I was like, maybe it should have been happier. It should have been like, oh, everything is thriving and everything is growing. And it is. And I think it's doing so, whether it's the gardener, whether it's Earth Friends, I think it's doing it at the exact pace that it should be. And that pace is not the pace of life right now.
Oh, yeah. So
it feels backwards, but as its own entity, it feels like everything is going just as it should for the times that we're in.
If things are growing and thriving, then things also have to be composting, and we have to be pruning them, and we have to be like just like sitting and waiting a long time for the right conditions. Like all of that's part of it too.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's like both things I'm extremely proud of. And being proud of something is like a space that's very uncomfortable for me because I'm used to like, let's fix it, let's change it, let's do this. So part of my like right now is, oh, I just have to say, this is good. This is exactly what you wanted it to be. This is wonderful and amazing. Now just trust it. It's almost like I feel better when I'm fixing something. But who wants to fix things their whole entire life, all the time?
That's so good. Just stop and recognize when something's working. How often do we do that?
I don't know. I not that often, I don't think.
Okay. So since we've talked to you, which was last year, early last year, how has your feelings or thoughts about the good dirt evolved? I know you've had some real direct experience with good dirt, it sounds like. So what can you say about what the good dirt means to you now from this vantage point?
Oh gosh, for a second I was like, your podcast, which I love and I've had some cool connections from, so that's amazing.
Thank you.
And then just dirt itself, I just have such a deeper love and respect for soil. I've always known what good dirt was thanks to my grandmother, who always called it earth. She always had this distinction of the soil on her property from just the dirt that was by the cornfield and it was dusty and you could blow it away with your own breath. That was just dirt. And then there was like the earth that was what you found when you were digging, planting flowers in her flower garden or under the daffodils. If she like moved bulbs one year, that was like this spongy, humus, wonderful soil. So I always knew what it was. And maybe that's why I took it for granted. But yeah, that's everywhere, right? It's like at Grand Mary's house. So yeah, no. Now, learning about gardening and permaculture and many episodes on the actual good dirt where people talk about soil and soil health is that we're losing that. We're really losing our good dirt. But we each have such an opportunity for those of us with the means and that live on land that we can work with, such as myself, to bring back that earth, to bring back that kind of soil. And how incredibly important it is for life on our planet. How many more life forms exist below our feet than above our feet. And it's always just so astounding to me. And I definitely have to thank my husband for this because I've been able to see him get so excited as like the quality of our soil changes and how we had to start out by supplementing, right? Like we had to get bags from the store and we had to get amendments and we had to get all of these things to really bring back the health in our soil. And then we would mix it in with our compost. And now we have the kind of soil that we're like, oh, hey, does somebody want our soil? Because it's really good. It's like a bag from the store. And it's been so many processes of what we plant and comfrey and nitrogen fixers and wood chip drops. And the coolest thing, though, that he did this year that we've been able to see, like in this growing season, was playing around with our own version of Terra Preta, which is we have a wood stove. And what we did is took the ashes from the wood stove and spread them over the garden beds during the winter. Mm. And when they were like hot, right? So that whole concept of there was controlled burns that people did, and then the Amazon where they dumped their coals, and just to play with what does this actually do for the soil. After doing that for a winter season and this spring season, it's like the happiest soil for direct sowing that we've had yet. And oh. Just that whole cyclical thing, there is an amount of air pollution that comes from burning wood in a stove. Nothing is perfect. But the fact that we can then take what was left over from our wood stove and bring it into our garden in the off season and then see how that happens. So there's so many ways that we can cultivate really healthy soil.
Yes.
And you just got to start doing them. Like those of us that work with soil, right? Not everybody's going to work with soil. That is not everybody's dharma and life path to have grubby fingernails. I did not think it was mine. Turns out it is. But if you are doing things and planting things and working with the land, then work with the soil. Get to know the soil.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating.
Yes. And whatever your living situation, whatever capacity, You can always do a little something to cultivate the good dirt, even if it's just composting your coffee grounds or growing an herb on your porch or on your windowsill and cultivating any kind of pollinator, if it's one that you get to set out on your front porch or whatever.
Yes.
I guess we should say our goodbyes and stuff, but thank you for coming back and giving us an update on what's going on with Earth Friends. It's very exciting to hear about. And also in your own project going on in your home. You're such a wonderful example to everyone who cares about the good dirt.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's so lovely to chat with you always.
Likewise, it was really wonderful being here and just having these real conversations with the two of you. I love it. I love that so much about the podcast and just the opportunity to share the We Are Earth Friends program, and that anyone, truly anyone, can purchase it and teach it and share it with their children and their community.
I'm so excited to get it for Johnny.
Yay. That is so exciting. And I think too, when, you know, just building that community of people talking to people, which I know that, you know, with Lady Farmer and both the good dirt that you both do so well.
Yes. And just remind everybody where to go if they want to look into it more.
Okay. So if you want to learn more about the program, it's all on the website. You can go to earthfriends.us and everything you will find there. You will find the program. You will find what we do. You can join our Substack, which has lots of free resources. You can go to our free resources page. Instagram is Earth Friends Everywhere. And also, you can just reach out to me directly. And I'm happy to chat with anyone about what this could look like for the children in your life. Because what we found too is this is just happening in so many different ways. And people have different needs and different wants. And we really want to meet parents, schools, homeschools, and children where they are.
Thank you, awesome. Jana. Thank you so much. We'll talk again.
Yes.
Thank you for tuning in, calling in, and spreading the good dirt. We love hearing from you. You can reach our listener voicemail at 443-459-1950. That's 443-459-1950. You can find this number in our show notes and in our Instagram profile.
This show is produced by Lady Farmer, a slow living lifestyle community, and the original music is composed and performed by John Kingsley.
For more from Lady Farmer, follow us on Instagram at We Are Lady Farmer. That's We Are Lady Farmer.
or join us online at www.ladyfarmer.com. We'll see you next time on The Good Dirt.
Goodbye.